Maybe you've had to close your windows at home when the air outside was too polluted, smoggy, or stinky. And I'm sure you've had to crack a few windows to air out the house from cleansers, from something burning in the kitchen, or maybe from a little gift that the dog left on the carpet. But what if the air had pollutants outside and inside? What then? That's the focus of the world's first large-scale study into indoor smog. Last year, 60 scientists met up in a ranch house at the University of Texas at Austin. They did some rather mundane things like cooking and cleaning, but they also measured the air inside very carefully. What did they find? And what might it mean for the larger fight against pollutants? Joining us from Amsterdam is one of the scientists from that study. Professor Delphine Farmer is a chemist based at Colorado State. Professor Farmer, welcome to 1A.
Thank you for having me.
We also welcome your questions and thoughts about this study. Email us 1A@WAMU.org, tweet us at 1A, or comment on our Facebook page. Professor Farmer, how did this study come about?
So the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation has been starting a new program in indoor chemistry and asked another professor at the University of Colorado, Marina Vance, and myself to start thinking about what sort of data, what sort of instruments we should really be thinking about if we're going to study the chemistry of the indoor environments. And we also started thinking about how do you build this field of indoor chemistry and how do you build a network of scientists. And I come from a history of being an outdoor atmospheric chemist. And so the way outdoor air quality and climate studies have really worked has been collaborative field measurements. So Nina Vance and I started thinking that really what we needed to think about indoor chemistry was to bring a large group of chemists who can measure the huge array of molecules that are indoors and really bring them to one place to think about what the chemistry was in a house.
Now, I've never heard of indoor chemistry before. Are there certain kinds of... Well, what is indoor chemistry? I've never heard of that before.
Well, that's the million-dollar question. So there's been a history of researchers thinking about indoor air quality. But then there's been a little more research done thinking about what happens, say, when you get on a plane and you get exposed to really high amounts of ozone. And it turns out that ozone can react with the molecules on your skin surface. And actually, that's sort of why you feel really grotty when you get off a plane. That started people thinking about, well, what's the chemistry that happens in an indoor environment, and does it really matter? So indoor chemistry really thinks about what molecules are present indoors, what are their sources, and then what happens to them, and how do they exchange and interact with the outdoor environment? So there's very little research on the topic, but it's getting a lot of interest now.
Were there any particular chemicals with regards to the air inside our homes that you thought might be worth study, perhaps because they might be dangerous?
Yes. So we know some things about indoor air quality. We knew that there would be a lot of particles indoors. And so that was one place we wanted to start thinking about all the particles indoors and what the chemical composition was and how that compared to outdoor environments. But we also started thinking about what chemistry is known. For example, cleaning with bleach is known to produce an array of chlorinated compounds. And so we thought, well, those ones might actually be quite interesting because halogenated organic compounds are reasonably well established that some of them have some pretty negative health effects. So we wanted to start probing what else was in the air.
I do want to talk more about what you found when we continue our conversation with Delphine Farmer, an associate professor at Colorado State University. We welcome your questions and thoughts about this or just about the air in your home. Have you ever had reason to be concerned about the air that you're breathing? Or if you have had those concerns, what have you done about it? 1A@WAMU.org. Stay close. We're speaking to Professor Delphine Farmer, an associate professor at Colorado State University, one of the chemists who took part in a four-week study into indoor smog, the pollution in the air inside our homes and our shared environments. As we take a look at that study, we welcome your questions and thoughts about that or your concerns about pollution indoors in general. Also, if you've had to deal with indoor air pollution, what did you encounter And how'd you deal with it? Comment on our Facebook page, tweet us at 1A, or email 1A@WAMU.org. Why settle on cooking and cleaning for the study? You all did a lot of cooking and a lot of cleaning.
We did. Well, they were obvious places to go to. You know, when you cooked, you could smell all the different scents, and you sometimes can see all the particles when you burn something. And so we knew that that was an area that was ripe for lots of chemistry. So we thought it would be a really interesting subtopic to study. Cleaning, we thought about in terms initially, as I mentioned before, the bleach cleaning. We knew that there would be some chlorinated chemistry, and I was really curious about what happens when those sorts of molecules interact with cooking related molecules. And then we thought, well, let's just think about what it is that we already know. We know that, as I said, people can react with the air itself. And so we thought, well, we'll look at occupation as well. So we thought about personal care products and the chemicals people bring into the home. So those were easy places to start. We knew we'd get a lot of signal for all of our instruments that were measuring all of the different molecules from cooking, cleaning, and occupancy.
Now, you chose to cook one of the most beloved and renowned kinds of meals for this study. You staged a Thanksgiving dinner. It seems like you staged it over and over and over. What was on the menu?
It was delicious. We had a turkey that was brined and spatchcocked and cooked very well by one of our graduate students. We had a classic sweet potato casserole. And then we had Brussels sprouts roasted with some pancetta. And then all the usual trimmings, the cranberry sauce, the gravy. And then, of course, pie for dessert. I think the table was pretty split on apple versus pumpkin, but we did it all.
We'll have that debate another day, because that will derail the show, apple versus pumpkin pie for Thanksgiving. We won't get into that. So tell us about how the study worked. It sounds like you basically kind of, from what I read, had to not only prepare the same meal over and over, but prepare it to a level of exactitude that most people who make Thanksgiving dinner have never had to do.
That's probably true. Well, we learned as we went, because as we say, this was the first time anyone had done such a large field study of indoor environments and activities. And so we designed the experiments so that we would have replicates, key piece of science, right? We wanted to do the same activity over and over. And so we would understand what the emissions were, and we would know what was related to a cooking emission from a stir fry versus, say, a piece of nasty air coming in from outdoors. And so we did replicates, and we would perform an activity, say mop a floor, and then we would wait for a couple of hours, and then we would open the windows, try and clear all the air out, and then close them again, and then repeat the experiment. With Thanksgiving, it takes a little longer to roast a turkey than it does to mop a kitchen floor.
Right.
So we did those on individual days. So we would take a whole day and do an entire experiment looking at all of the emissions.
Were there any, in terms of the cleansers that you used, were you using just like big name, common brands, Clorox, 409, and so on? Did you use any of the newer products that claim to be easier on the environment? Which ones did you focus on?
Yeah, we tried a set. So we started with a basic bleach cleaner, and then we also had a terpene-based cleaner along the lines of pine sol, pine-scented cleaner. Then we also had one day where we mopped with a natural cleaner, right? One of these environmentally friendly ones. And what was interesting is that, of course, we were looking at the data throughout the experiment, and we had thought that when you cleaned, used one of these cleaners, that we would see the production of little particles in the air from all of the organic chemistry, and we never saw it. So we sort of started trying to see how far we could push the system. And so we ended up cleaning the house with vinegar and then coming in and cleaning it with ammonia afterwards to see if we would see any chemistry. And we didn't see what we were expecting, I will say. But we tweaked the experiment as we went along.
So this doesn't mean that there were no chemicals present. It's just that they weren't really in the air in any appreciable volumes. Is that it?
Right. Or that you would see the chemical from say, the mopping solution. We would see that in the air, but we wouldn't see, we didn't always see additional chemistry occurring. And so then we thought, well, now we're seeing the emission. So you brought your pine sol-like cleaner, and now your house smells of pinene, and our instruments would saturate with so many volatile organic compounds. But then the air would clear out pretty rapidly through the HVAC system.
I hate to interrupt you, but would you define that term volatile organic compounds? That sounds like it's kind of the crux of what you were looking for, right?
Yes, it was. So volatile means that these are molecules that can be in the gas phase in the air, so things that you can breathe. Organic means that they're made out of organic carbon, so carbon and hydrogen. And then compounds, they're just chemicals of all different types. And so these might include compounds as simple as alpha pinene, which is a molecule that comes, that's what you predominantly smell when you have a terpene-based cleaner, so that pine scent. Or they might be a little more complicated, and you might get molecules that are things like phthalates, which are from plastics. And so all of those molecules we can think of as being volatile organic compounds when they're in the gas phase.
Are volatile organic compounds, or VOCs, dangerous?
It depends on the molecule. So a lot of them are completely benign to the best of our knowledge. So for example, if you cut open a lemon, you're going to smell limonene. And that's a monoterpene, it's a large molecule, and as far as I know, that's not going to do anything bad to you, even though we see it in very, very high concentrations. But then you can have other molecules, and I'll use some of the phthalates or pesticides as an example, and they can still be classified as volatile organic compounds when they're in the gas phase, but they can also be quite toxic. Methyl isocyanate is another example of that. So there's some molecules that are VOCs that are dangerous, others are not, and then there's this massive group in the middle that we just have no idea whether they are toxic or not.
Let's go back to that Thanksgiving dinner. Talk about what you discovered from preparing that dinner repeatedly. Were there any chemicals that surprised you or concerned you that were in the air?
Absolutely. So I come from the outdoor atmospheric chemistry world. So I've studied air pollution in places as diverse as Mexico City to the California Sierra Nevada. And there, I'm used to seeing particles of a certain size. So they're between 100 nanometers and 1,000 nanometers, make up the bulk of what we breathe. But in the indoor environment, we saw huge amounts of ultrafine particles. So these are much smaller, an order of magnitude smaller. And so they can penetrate further into your lungs. But we saw huge amounts of those indoors. And that surprised me. We saw really high concentrations. So for a few hours during Thanksgiving, we had several hundred micrograms per meter cubed of aerosol. So that would qualify as a very bad air day. But of course, it only lasted for a few hours. Other molecules that were surprising, though, just on a very basic molecular sense, there's carbon dioxide, which we, of course, breathe out, and then our gas stove emitted as well. And we saw concentrations, whenever we cooked it, we're getting to about 1,000 parts per million. And on Thanksgiving, they would get to about 4,000 parts per million. And that's compared to 400 outside. And those levels are surprising because that's actually where there's research that shows that that's where you start having impairment in decision-making skills. So that surprised me a little bit.
That might explain why some of us eat too much, is that that's just all it. We are impaired through the air. It is not our fault.
Now, my excuse.
Exactly. Right. I could say Professor Farmer told me that's why I have to loosen my belt. Now, is this the kind of thing that should make people... I want to make sure that we keep this research in context. Does this mean that we should be concerned about cooking Thanksgiving dinner, or that we should do it differently? Like, what does this finding mean?
Well, to put this in context, I didn't change anything about the way I cooked holiday meals in the last 6 months. So I think we should really think about this in terms of the beginnings of a knowledge base. And so we don't know how a lot of the molecules that we saw coming out of cooking and cleaning, we don't know what their health effects are. And so I don't want to get anybody too worried about that. But what we did But what it does highlight is that there are high emissions of particles. There are high emissions of some other compounds. And so ventilating your room is a really good idea. So if you have a kitchen vent, you absolutely should be using that and turning that on. You should be changing the filters in your house regularly. And when the house starts to get really filled with smoke in particular, or if you're burning candles, then you should be trying to open the windows and thinking about how to ventilate your house and how to move air through.
I'm Joshua Johnson. You're listening to 1A. Let me get to a few of your comments. Lisa tweeted, I live in a house built in the 1920s. At those times, houses were built close to the road. I am always hesitant to open windows to get, quote unquote, fresh air. Another listener wrote on our website, the1a.org, I would think that indoor air quality is improving. When I was a child in the 70s, it was common for people to smoke cigarettes indoors. Nowadays, fewer people smoke, and they're more likely to take their habit outdoors. Another huge improvement is the filters on central heating and AC units. Professor Farmer, what about that?
I think those are great questions. So we know what the effects of outdoor pollution are in terms of particles and ozone and NOx. So absolutely, if you're living near a busy road, the probability that your outdoor air pollution is bad is very high. And we also know that most of the time, I should be very clear, most of the time the air quality inside your home is better than it is outdoors in terms of the traditional pollutants that we think about. So one does want to be careful about bringing polluted outdoor air in. In terms of changes over time, that's a hard one because we never measured what air quality was, tens of years ago when those homes were being built. And so we don't know what the net change is, but I think the questions about cigarette smoke are very valid. There is this idea that, you know, that if you smoke, you're breathing in particles, and that's really dangerous. If someone near you is smoking, then you're breathing in the particles from their cigarette, and that's really dangerous to your health. But there's also been studies that show that there's chemistry that happens with cigarette smoke that gets onto carpets or onto surfaces inside a home, and then a long time later, that those chemicals can be re-emitted and changed in form. So there's another mechanism of exposure there. And so thinking about the history of a home is actually a really interesting question.
Another listener tweeted, what are ways to clean the air? HEPA filters? Plants?
HEPA filters, absolutely. A good HVAC system is a great idea. Again, especially when you're cooking, or if you have people who are asthmatic in your house, then thinking about those sorts of HEPA filters is really good. Plants don't actually do much to the air. They might improve the quality of your life, but they're not going to have any purification effects on your home, unfortunately.
Some of you shared your stories about these filters. Manna tweeted, our kids had regular respiratory issues when we lived about a mile away from the infamously congested 405 freeway in Los Angeles. Once we got a HEPA filter air purifier, we noticed a marked improvement in health. I'm shocked when I see condos being built so close to freeways. Professor Farmer, what exactly is a HEPA filter?
It's a high efficiency filter for particles. So it just is, as air moves through the filter, it catches a lot of all those particles that you're going to breathe. Of course, it's only effective for a certain amount of time. So you have to change your filters regularly to get the full benefit of them. But they are really useful. And I think this also points to another really important point, and that is that the air outside certainly infiltrates, it comes inside. And so the quality of our air outside really, really matters to the indoor environment.
So there's issues with the air outside, there's issues with the air inside. Should we just hold our breath for a few years? I mean, it sounds like no matter where we breathe, something's going on.
We should think about where the problems are in our own lives, I think. So for example, if you're living somewhere where there's bad air quality, outdoor air quality, then that's a very known effect. There are epidemiological studies that show very clear links between outdoor air quality and hospital visits and respiratory disease. So there's very clear research in the link between outdoor air pollution and health. indoor air is a tricky one to talk about because the compounds that we're seeing are quite different from what we have outdoors. And I don't think we know enough about exposure or about health effects or toxicology to actually be able to tell you what to do. So I'm certainly not sitting at home wearing a face mask. But I think it's important to realize that most of the time, the compounds that we know are dangerous are usually lower indoors until you start cooking. But there's a lot of research to be done.
Before we let you go, it sounds like there aren't any particular like major steps we need to take. HEPA filters being a good one. Any other steps that you would recommend, just in terms of the general air quality inside our homes and businesses, that people might consider before we got to go?
I think that using cleaners that, if you can use cleaners that don't have bleach in them, that's always a very good idea. Ventilating your house whenever you have really strong scents is another really excellent idea. And I think there's really clear research that shows that ventilation with your kitchen hood can be a really good idea.
Professor Delphine Farmer, a chemist and associate professor at Colorado State University. Professor, thanks for talking to us.
Thank you.
Remember, you can connect with us about upcoming episodes and debates online at the1a.org and click Ask 1A. That's the word, the number one, the letter A.org, and click Ask 1A. This conversation was produced by Haley Blassingame and Jake Rutter. To learn more about them and the rest of our team, visit the1a.org/staff. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thank you so much for listening. This is 1A.